Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our new website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans, and welcome to episode number 229 of the Peristyle Podcast. Today is July 16th, 2012. Got a big show for you this week on the podcast. A lot of questions to get to. We love to hear from you. So if you have questions, email us, podcast at uscfootball.com, or give us a call, 206-888-6755. Or if you want to do it right from your computer, go to peristylepodcast.com. Left side of the page, click on the icon to leave a voice message. Leave it for us. Keep it brief, 30 seconds or so. We'll play it on the air for you and answer your question to the best of our ability. We have Dan Weber coming up later on in the show. We have Coach Harvey Hyde right now. Coach, what's up, sir? How are you?
Everything is just great. I tell you, what a great week last year for you. For USC football, and it looks like it's going to continue to roll. Ryan, if you remember in our last podcast, I said, hey, these guys better not sit back and wait. You better start committing or you're not going to be going to USC. And I sort of gave you an incident as far as I was a parent and what I'd be telling my kid. And it certainly did prove out, didn't it?
Yeah, that was a Monday podcast. Then on Wednesday, USC got about 900 pounds or so of commitment. So I guess they listened to the show, Coach, and heard what you had to say and jumped on board.
I don't know if they listened to the show or not, but it's starting to happen because I think you're going to get a rash of more, too, here in the next week because kids who are really serious about becoming a Trojan, they're not going to sit back and wait. If you're playing the field and you're not sure, then okay, you really don't want the competition. You don't want to be a Trojan because you know what's there and you say, hey, I can go somewhere else and I don't need to compete like this. But the true winner wants to go where the competition is, but you can't run and hide from it. And when you play a team that you didn't go to because of competition, you really don't feel you can beat them.
All right. Well, Coach, before we jump into everything, I want to thank our sponsor, Southern California Tickets. You can go to sctickets.com. That's sctickets.com. Or call them at 1-800-888-7287. Ask for Curtis. Tell him Coach and Ryan sent you. You can get tickets for concerts. If you want to go to the theater, take your wife, your girlfriend, something like that. Sporting events, anything in Southern California or across the country, you can go to sctickets.com and they will hook you up. And Coach, I wanted to talk a little recruiting first. I know we talked about it last week and there's a question about recruiting, but before we get into that, just to let people know, we're going to try to get the podcast up hopefully by 10:30, 10:45 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time. And at 11 o'clock, Jalen Ramsey, so by the time you won't be able to listen to all of this by the time Jalen Ramsey announces live, it's going to be exclusive on Rivals.com, but we'll have plenty of analysis afterwards. Jalen Ramsey's a four-star cornerback from Nashville, Tennessee, where my wife hails from. Looks really good for USC right now, so we'll have to see what he picks, but it will be live. You can watch a live broadcast on Rivals.com. We'll be tweeting all that stuff out. So by the time you actually listen to this, you probably already know what happened with Jalen Ramsey, but this will go up a little bit before that. And Coach, I don't know if you had any thoughts on this kid.
I think he's a great player. I think his stock has really gone up over the last couple of camps that he's been at. I don't want to predict things, but I have a strong feeling he's going to follow the lead of the other players, and I think he'll be a Trojan. And then that's going to lead into what is SC going to do as far as with the other defensive backs or kids out there. Hargraves is now interested. You've still got Redfield. You've got these others, so you're going to have to start predicting or projecting probably Sua Cravens as a linebacker and others to be able to take these great players. This is the year for secondary players, so you want to take all you can get, but yet you've got to be smart, too, to be able to fill the needs of your other positions.
I agree with you 100%. And the first question, Coach, has to do with recruiting. We normally talk about this with Gerard, but we want to get you in there. You've done more recruiting than any of us, so this is from our friend Guy. He says, does anyone anywhere have such a threesome committed as Bigelow? He's talking about Kenny Bigelow, Vanderdoes, Eddie Vanderdoes, and Kylie Fitz. In my opinion, Vanderdoes especially looks to give anyone fits. Sorcerer O, referring to Coach Orgeron, does it again. And again, that's from Guy. He's really happy about the three players that signed. The defensive lineman that USC has now in the, not signed, I shouldn't say that, as verbal commitments right now.
Well, but, excuse me, I'm sorry. Let me tell you, first of all, when these guys verbally committed, the first two you mentioned, Fitz, I told you he's got a motor that runs full speed. I liked him. I told you even liked him better than McCarthy, the kid that went to UCLA this past year. He's a tough kid. He plays hard. And I can tell who likes football. And he likes football. He likes contact. He doesn't get intimidated. So he's the type of kid that likes to play defense. And I think he's going to be a great player. And then when you talk about Bigelow, heck, I love Bigelow from the day that he's announced. And now they're talking about moving him inside, what I think is a tremendous, tremendous deal. He's 6'3", 290, but he's quick. He doesn't need to get much bigger. He's quick, and he can overpower offensive guards. And along with Vanderdoes, I'll tell you, Vanderdoes and Bigelow inside might be the best pair of defensive tackles in the country as far as freshmen right now. They could play right now. I really feel that they could play right now. Of course, they don't have the experience, and they're going to find out it's different than what it was in high school. But Vanderdoes and Bigelow are studs. I mean, these two guys are going to work hard. They're going to work well together. It's almost hard to say that you can redshirt these kids. You probably aren't going to be able to redshirt these kids because they're those type of players that don't want a redshirt, and they're going to be good enough to play. I think these two guys will play right away. I think they're great players. I think Fitz is a great player. And I think right now the key thing as far as Coach O and the defense is concerned and Coach Kiffin is who's the other defensive end going to be. I think that will put the dot on the defensive line. Who is the other defensive end going to be? And we'll find out that soon. But I think it's going to be someone that Coach O is working on. He likes him. And I think somebody's going to see what's already there, and someone's going to say, I'm going to USC.
All right. Well, thanks for that one, Guy. Let's go to Mac D. He had a question on the depth issues, and he's talking about national college football writer Bruce Feldman, who's a friend of mine, wrote extensively about this, about an article on USC about the lack of depth recently, and said, and this is a quote, I'd put USC's first 50 players up against any other program in the country. And no question, Lane Kiffin has some depth concerns, but so does every other coach in the country. There isn't a program in the top 25 that wouldn't be hobbled if it had some bad luck and lost, say, its top two guys at a key position or its quarterback was sidelined. But if you actually look at what USC has at each position, the Trojans are pretty stacked. And Mac D wrote kind of a longer email about it, but just talking about the people throw out the depth issues simply because of the 75 scholarships, and I think that's a real concern. But if you look, you know, if you look at the two deep chart, certainly I think there's some weaker spots. But like Bruce said, the top 50 guys, they're pretty much as talented as anybody.
And I agree with you. You know, you always wish you had a three deep everywhere, but you never have three deep anywhere. And I have to agree with Bruce Feldman what he said, probably the top 50 players if you compare them with anywhere in the country. In fact, I've said this, and I think I said this last year. If you threw all the rosters out there in the table and you drew for who had the personnel that you'd want to coach, everybody in the Pac-12 would coach pull USC. Everybody would trade their roster for USC, even with 75. And you started that slogan, our 75 is better than your 85. Who would you change your roster with? I mean, let's be realistic. Sure, you might have not four running backs, but you have three good running backs. I think Buck Allen's going to surprise everybody. I think DJ Morgan's going to surprise everybody. And everybody knows about Curtis McNeil, and he makes up for his size with his heart. So, I mean, how many running backs do you need? Plus, Pinner's coming in. He could possibly be a running back if you need it. And Nelson Aguilar has been a great running back if you need it. I hope that, you know, they don't have to burn a year on Nelson, but I'm going to tell you, Nelson is so good, he's going to play. I mean, he's going to play. He's that good of a football player. But yeah, you might have a little depth problem here or there, but look at the strong points of the team. I think the offensive line is solid. I think that the secondary can't get any better. I think the receivers can't get any better. How about the group of tight ends? How can that get any better? And when you talk about the quarterback position, they got the two big best backups that were available the year that they came out. So they should be ready to play. There's no excuses for that. Or they misjudged their talent level at that time. So, you know, sure, you have a couple of positions, a defensive tackle position, but you have kids like Woods and Uko and Tavai and these guys that are going to have to play big. And if you need to make some position change, you will. But you got Kevin Green. Some of these guys are going to step up and really play above their means. It's a lot to being a Trojan now. And there's a lot of pride in living up to what Mark Barkley wants to do, and that's coming back and win a national championship. So, yes, maybe you don't have all the players at all the positions, but I wouldn't change their roster for any other team in the country.
Coach, and there's a good point there, and I want you to maybe comment on this. We put out the depth charts. We update those on the site and, you know, whenever something happens. But a lot of times when you're talking about that third and fourth spot, if the two guys in front of the number three or number four guy get hurt, that number three guy probably is not likely to come in. There's usually enough, you know, more talented players in other positions that were maybe the backup that would move over and take a spot. So you have guys moving, you know, from defensive end to defensive tackle or whatever you need to do. We saw Wes Horton move around a little bit. I understand that the depth issues and certainly a bunch of catastrophic injuries would hurt this program just as much as it would hurt anyone else, maybe a little more so, but it doesn't seem like people take into account that you're not really going to have to rely on that fourth string middle, you know, walk-on middle linebacker if you don't have to. I mean, I think there's guys that can move around and take spots. There's enough talent, and you mentioned a guy like Kevin Green, unproven talent that are scholarship players that are, you know, they look like they're very good, but we just haven't seen them that much. I think there's enough around there that someone might have to move over, someone move into a spot that they haven't played before, or they have to play and we haven't seen them on the field. But it's not like there's just a lack of talent after you look at the two deep.
I agree 100%. And let's don't forget about the players that are coming in. There's some great players coming in to USC this coming year. So there are talented players who can fill in. You don't want to play these players that are coming in unless they can contribute. You don't want to burn a redshirt year on a player just for one or two plays or three or four games. You want to redshirt those type of players. Those great, great, great players don't want to redshirt. Why? It costs them a lot of money as far as coming out as a junior. But I'll tell you, I think USC's got a great roster. Wouldn't exchange it with anybody in the country. And I think that they've become a very close football team. And you can see that now propelling down to even the verbal committed class of 2013 and also 2014. When you look at the linemen they've already got committed for 2014, that's starting another great recruiting year. So it's I think this season is very important to USC as far as continuing the trend, as far as 15 scholarships and 75 scholarships are not going to hurt us. And when you're a football coach, how many players can you travel? I mean, you can only travel 50-some players as far as when you travel to a Pac-12 game. How many players actually play in a game? Maybe 40 players? You don't want to drop off your talent level and have something break down where someone gets an easy touchdown. So you don't play a lot of players, but you play the players that can be proved and that are out there that deserve that opportunity, but they're good enough. And SC's got that roster. So I think people got to kick back and relax and hope no one gets hurt. And that's going to happen. You know it's going to happen with somebody. But that's part of what football's all about.
Okay, well, let's move on to Brian. And speaking of depth, it's kind of a good segue here. He has two questions. His first one is, if Curtis McNeil were to go down with an injury, will DJ Morgan and Buck Allen be able to carry the running back load by themselves? Who would be the next running back? And he says, I know Davis and Isaac are coming in next year. He's talking about Justin Davis and Ty Isaac. There's class of 2013 guys. But what do you think is going to happen if something happens to Curtis McNeil, Coach?
Well, if that happens, and I hope it doesn't happen, DJ Morgan, it's time for him to step up. I thought he had a great spring. He made a great run in the spring game. He's maturing. His knee is well. He ran track. He's strong. He's conditioned himself. He's ready for a banner year. He was a great back coming out of high school. there weren't many backs better than DJ Morgan, so let's give him credit for that, and let's say when it's time, he's got to be ready to play. Buck Allen, we don't know much about Buck Allen, but when I saw him in the spring, and that's all I can tell you is what I saw in the spring at this level, he surprised me. I said, who in the heck is that? And the two or three carries that he had in the spring, it really surprised me. And every time I read about him, they talk about his size, and also they talk about his speed. So if he continues to develop and also thinks that he has an opportunity to play, you know, players reach out, and coaches reach out to players, and they say, hey, you better get yourself ready. So he's got a good feeling going into camp, and I don't want to say you're going to move Nelson Aguilar there. You've got Pinner there from Mission Viejo, who could be a running back. I'm wondering what they're going to do with Madden next year after he recovers from his knee surgery. Is he going to be a running back, or is he going to stay on defense? I think he's going to stay on defense now with Davis and Isaac coming in, but we'll see what happens there. So you've got enough people there. Remember, SC's run comes off of their pass, but when they decided to run the football is when they became a great offensive football team last year. So you don't need to run the ball every down, but you got to believe you can run the football. And if you believe you can run the football and your team has the confidence in your running game, now that opens up a whole new dimension in play action pass. So that's what I hope happens in their non-conference or their early games, that they develop the running game along with the passing game and make sure they're all ready for the tough games that'll be ahead. And one that is really going to be a tough game. I watched the Stanford-USC game this morning. It was on real early, like at 6 a.m. They're having replays of the top games last year. And I'll tell you, Stanford's got a lot of players back, and they are going to be tough next year at Stanford-USC's third game.
I agree with you, Coach. People are kind of overlooking that game, but it's certainly going to be a tough one. And that's a good segue. We have great segues this show. To Brian's second question, despite the hype, it seems terribly difficult to navigate through November and early December, having to play Oregon, UCLA, Notre Dame, and most likely Oregon again. In your opinion, what are the odds of USC pulling that off? And he doesn't mention that third game you were talking about up at Stanford, too. That's going to be a tough one.
It's going to be tough, and Washington's going to be a tough one, too, just to mention to everyone. You know, they've had trouble beating Washington. Washington's got a lot of players back, and it's going to be a really challenging game up there in Seattle. So you've got a challenging game every week, but you've got to get yourself ready to play at a level where you can compete against teams that you know are trying to beat you and make their season. But can they handle that? They're going to have to handle that. That's something that that's just something you sell to the team. To win a Pac-12 championship, to be a national champion, you gotta get through that road. That's part of your road that you have to go through. You got to stay in the left-hand lane. You can't vary to the right-hand lane. You can't get off at the wrong off-ramp. You got to stay in the left-hand lane and play at a level that a champion plays at. And I think the key game, too, if they get to that Oregon game, and let's say both teams are undefeated, the key thing in that game is they've got to beat Oregon the first time. They've got to beat Oregon the first time. That means the championship game will be back in the Coliseum. I think it'd be very difficult to beat Oregon at Oregon in Eugene if they beat USC in the Coliseum. You don't want to go back there for the championship game. That's if Oregon wins the North and USC wins the South. We're assuming that will happen. I think the South is not as tough as the Northern Division, but I think that if you're going to be a champion, you've got to be able to rise up and beat the Notre Dames and beat these teams and UCLA, whatever. Notre Dame's going to be a very difficult game. We didn't mention that because you're going to have to beat Notre Dame at home, and they're going to come really challenged, ready to play, and they've got a good football program. They just haven't yet learned how to finish, and they haven't yet learned how to win. Now Stanford's learned how to win. Washington's working hard on trying to learn how to win. They scored a lot of points in their last game last year in a game which against Baylor, it cost Holt his defensive coordinatorship, but they're scoring a lot of points. You don't want to get in a scoring race with them. Stanford's a tough team that knows how to win. To go into Stanford, they've won 12 games, 11 games, 12 games. They've learned how to win at Stanford. And to beat a team that's learned how to win is even tougher, even if they don't have the same type of athlete you do. They don't surrender. They don't surrender. So it's going to be a challenging schedule, and I think that the first two games are really key key games for USC, but rather than beat these teams badly, what they have to do is to work all phases of their offense and defense, developing their running game, developing their different coverages and their different blitzes and stunts so that they perform them well when they play against the main part of their schedule, which will be Stanford, the third game at Palo Alto.
Yeah, you can't have games like Arizona State and Arizona last year where they just weren't really – they're still trying to figure things out. This team should be mature enough where – and USC fans are hoping they hit the ground running starting in that very first game. And by the time you play Stanford, the offense won't be out of sorts. It won't be just Barkley to Woods kind of thing. They obviously have established a running game at this point, established Marquise Lee. You hope all of that stuff has been in there, throwing to the tight ends, mixing it up, pushing, putting the ball all over the field. If they're doing that, I think you have a really good shot, but they just have to avoid that slow start that you had last year.
Yes, and you can't just because a play is there, you don't just run it to death and you score six touchdowns to set a record. You don't do that. You got to develop your entire philosophy, your entire running game, so that when you need it, you've got it. And I think the same thing with the defense. On offense, your leader, Matt Barkley. On defense, your leaders, Roby and McDonald. And you got to rely on those guys to get those players ready to play, and they will. You've still got a young team. But you've got a talented team, and I'll take talent over an old team that can't play, not athletes. FC's got athletes, so you've got to put them in a position where they can make their plays, and they're not thinking about playing football, they're playing football.
Great points, Coach. Well, one last topic. This is from Jeremy in Honolulu. He says, but not for long. He's actually been stationed over there quite a while, and he's coming back to Southern California, so I think he's pretty excited about that. So congrats to you, Jeremy. He said, I saw an article about Tim Tebow participating at a recent Trojans throwing session. Is that not a huge slap in the face to our Mark Sanchez? What say you? And it wasn't one of the throwing sessions where all the players were out there. I think he was on campus or was in Southern California for something and went out with some of the players and threw the football around. It wasn't one of their big ones where everyone was out there. We would have seen them at those, but I think it was just a few players that were kind of out there. But is that a slap in the face to Mark Sanchez that the guys are playing around with Tim Tebow out there?
No. But I think he was probably out here for the ESPYs. You remember he was at the ESPYs and probably wanted to get in a couple of days of throwing, and he probably went over there, and the kids heard he was coming over, and he needed some receivers and stuff to catch his balls. And I think it's a way of introducing kids to a great kid, and he's a winner, and not a slap to Mark Sanchez. I mean, these guys someday hope to play at that level, and I think it's a motivation to these kids to be able to reach out with players like this and talk to them about their skills and how hard he works and what it takes to be a winner. And I don't think it's a slap to Mark Sanchez. I mean, I'm sure if Mark Sanchez was down in Florida and needed to work out down there, the kids would come out and catch his balls too. I think those things happen. Players work out with players. And I think it's probably attracted players out there because they wanted to meet him more than play with him. He's one of the most popular players out there. His jerseys sell probably more jerseys just about than anybody else's, except for maybe Peyton Manning now at Denver. So, no, I don't look at it as a slap. Would I have gotten upset if I was the coach? No, I would not have. I would have wanted to meet him myself and see exactly what he had to say.
I was actually in Las Vegas this weekend, and we stopped at the Nike outlet store on the drive home. And the two big athletes that they had, well, they had Maria Sharapova, like pictures, like murals of them up, and they had Tim Tebow and Clay Matthews. So USC was represented well there. Maybe one of the players, if they really wanted to be loyal to Mark Sanchez and the former Trojans, they could have asked Tim Tebow if he would have played H-back or something like that. What do you think? That'd be kind of funny.
I don't think he'll do that. because I don't think they'll let him do that. But I just think it was more or less a way of meeting Tim Tebow.
Yes.
And I think that if I was the coach, I'd have invited him in my office even. And that's not just being disloyal to anyone. I mean, it's a fraternity. Most players are friends off the field. Believe me, they're friends off the field. But when it comes game day, and coaches the same way, they're friends with each other. But when it comes game day, that's their business. We aren't friends today. We're competing. This is what we do for a living. So, no, I don't look at that as a slap at all.
Okay. Well, Coach, thanks again. We're going to cut this show. It's not that short, but we cut a few minutes short because we have to get ready for the big Jalen Ramsey announcement. So, yeah, check that out on uscfootball.com. We'll have plenty of information on the four-star cornerback from Nashville, Tennessee, checking it out. And, Coach, thanks again for coming on the show. We really appreciate it.
And thank you. Thank you very much. And do me a favor. Give me a quick call when you get the announcement, would you?
I will do it.
I appreciate it very much. And, again, I want to thank everyone for calling in with the questions. And I'm looking forward to to football as much as anyone. And we'll be back next week.
All right. Sounds good, Coach. Thanks very much. And everyone else, we'll be back in 30 seconds talking with uscfootball.com beat writer Dan Weber.
Meet us on the other side of the break for more of the Peristyle Podcast. Tickets, tickets, tickets. SC Tickets is your concert, sports, and theater ticket source. We have the tickets you need to any event worldwide. Football tickets are now available. Call SC Tickets now at 1-800-888-7287. 1-800-888-7287. That's 1-800-888-7287. Or visit us on the web at sctickets.com. SC Tickets, concert, sports, and theater. We now return to the Peristyle Podcast and your host, Ryan Abraham.
We're back here on the Peristyle Podcast, joined by uscfootball.com beat writer extraordinaire, Dan Weber. Mr. Dan Weber, how are you doing, sir? What's going on?
Very good, Ryan. One day closer to one week, or I'm not sure how we categorize it now, closer to the start of camp. But, again, there's so much recruiting there. It's like, it's been a shorter off season, it seems like, this year with all the stuff that's happened.
Certainly. It's
Good stuff this time.
Yeah, no, definitely good stuff. There's been a lot of, 3-in-1 day last week, which is kind of crazy, and Jalen Ramsey on Monday committing. So by the time this podcast gets up, it won't be long after that he will actually have made his announcement. We're going to be putting up around the same time. So kind of crazy stuff right now in the world of recruiting. And then, yeah, before you know it, fall camp's going to be here.
It truly changes every year. That's kind of fun, I guess, about it. There's no like normal. Just this is the plain old off season anymore. I mean, I know every once in a while somebody will say, "Boy, I can't wait for football season to get here," but it's not quite like it used to be, where for months there wasn't a whole lot of news. That's not the case now.
Especially, I think being able to show those summer workout videos where the fans could actually see what the players are doing to get ready, throwing the football around. You can see guys like Nelson Aguilar coming in, and you don't have to wait for the beginning of fall camp to see him. I think that kind of helps just get you a little closer, get you that little buzz or whatever you need of football before it actually starts.
Yeah, there's not as much anticipation, but there's a whole lot more, observation. And, for us, it's great. You really do have to see a Nelson Aguilar, for example, in person. And you don't have to see him a lot, when there's he's a kid like that. That's all you need, but you do need to see him. Video is great, but it's just you never know, for example, who they're playing against. And you just don't have a total sense of what exactly does he look like, in person. And there are athletes that kind of bring that, that it factor with them that you can tell pretty much the first time they run a pattern. And that's what you see with a guy like, Nelson Aguilar. You just, it when you see it.
All right. Well, let's jump into some of these questions. We can talk. Well, we got some questions about the summer workouts. We've got a couple Oregon questions too, but this one's an interesting one about the future at offensive line for USC. Get this one.
Hello, this is Kevin from Bakersfield. Just have a question for the podcast today about last year's offensive line class. I just want to know who you guys think is going to have the best Trojan career, the best or the biggest immediate impact, and who do you think could have the best NFL career out of last year's offensive line class? Thank you, guys, and fight on.
Well, it's just so hard in every way to overlook, Kevin. It's so hard to overlook Andre Walker. And you know, literally, you know, even now, even though he's not the heaviest USC offensive lineman or heaviest player on the team, he just, in so many ways, he's the biggest. I mean, he just is, it's hard to ignore him. Playing that left tackle position, one would think that, you know, he's got an awfully good chance to have a great deal of impact. Marcus Martin, obviously, if you can come in as a 17-year-old, kind of unheralded freshman, and start at guard and pretty much be solid and hang in there and you know, get up to speed and then just kind of, you know, be part of an offensive line that, you know, gave up essentially the fewest sacks in the nation for a team that really likes to throw the ball. And you're playing next to Matt Khalil, who's going number one in the NFL draft. You know, it's hard not to say, you know, Marcus Martin doesn't have an awfully good future. So those two, you know, would jump out of that class. But as we see, you know, the offensive line is kind of a unit. And it's kind of how all of them play together. And, you know, a kid like Cyrus Hobbit, you know, it seems like he's you know, fitting in the off-season work and getting a lot of work at center, and, you know, they're giving him a chance, and that'll be an interesting position to see what happens after Khalid Holmes leaves this year and how they decide to go at that spot. They'll have several different ways to go, but it would be hard not to go with Andre Walker as the most impactful and maybe the NFL guy, you know, with a career that's going to – he looks like he's got the kind of physique that's going to hold up. And that's also a big part of, you know, success in the NFL.
No, it certainly does. And that's interesting the way that you answered that question. I wasn't sure if he was talking about those would actually be class of 2011 guys or if he meant – Zach Banner, Jordan Simmons, Max Turek, the
good
guys.
Good question. I'm not, now that I think I was thinking Bakersfield, and the focus might be, you know, on the kids from Bakersfield, the older kids. You know, we didn't have anybody in this class from Bakersfield coming in, but that's a good question. I think the one who looks like he's the most ready to play surely seems to be Max Turek. Zach Banner is going to be really interesting to watch. He is absolutely, I think, at the very top line of how tall can you be and be a successful offensive lineman. I think below 6'8", it's not as much of a question if you can play. Above 6'8", it's kind of, I think 6'9", which sure looks where he is, is really an interesting challenge for a kid. He looks awfully athletic. Looks like a wonderful kid. He's just a cool kid, and he has a lot of fun out there. Very athletic. Got good feet, but it's a challenge. And there may be ways in which, you know, you turn that that kind of size into an advantage that we've never seen before. But he's going to be interesting. He's going to be very interesting to watch. We think we might not see a whole lot of Jordan Simmons. We're just not sure about. The kids talk about, we haven't seen him on the practice field yet. The kids talk about his knee, and you know, typically you're going to think about, with all the incoming freshmen, you're going to think about redshirting him. So one would think that's, you know, real potential for him. But I would have to see them more to even have a guess. I know this, Max Turek seems to have adjusted awfully quickly to college football. He seems to have done it, and he's had the advantage of being here for the whole first summer session, so he's had a lot more work, but he looks like he belongs out there right now. He's got some versatility in terms of playing different positions, so we know that much. As far as, you know, speculating on careers and all that, the offensive lineman probably would be the most difficult because without pads and without organized, you know, plays and things like that, they can probably show you the least in these workouts. They don't have as much that they can really prove, ways in which they can prove themselves. So That's a good question, and it's one I don't think we know. I mean, if you'd asked us this question last year, Marcus Martin's name wouldn't even have come up in terms of, you know, if somebody would have said last year, there's a 17-year-old kid that's going to start on the USC's offensive line, you know, the whole season and solidify it, and you'd have just said, nah, come on, not going to happen.
Right.
So the offensive line, even if you're there every day, you're not always sure because you don't know the calls in the huddles and you don't know all the little things in terms of exactly how they're trying to do everything. So that's one you've got to watch a lot, and you're still not 100% sure if you know exactly what it is you're seeing.
Okay. Let's move on. This is a question from Kevin in South OC. He said, a few weeks back, you and Dan were comparing our QBs to pro guys, but couldn't think of one for Max. And he says, how about Jake Plummer? Strong arm, 6'4", speed, and a gunslinger mentality. Also on that same note, when Max was coming out of high school, I read he had a 4.5 to 4.6 wheels. How come Cody gets all the love for his escapability when Winnick can move as well? That's from Kevin in South OC.
I'm not sure. You know, I was thinking maybe the Schaub kid that from Texas is somebody that Max looks like. The difference is Cody's got the escapability, the real wide base, the real bouncy quick feet. However, if you're going to run a quarterback draw, Max has got really good explosive straight ahead speed, and he's shown it a couple of times, shown it once this summer, showed it, you know, I guess in the spring at least one time. So they run two different ways, but Max is this fairly explosive for his size, certainly for a quarterback his size, and Cody's got this real bouncy, quick-footedness, the Drew Brees kind of, you know, ability to, you know, where he can elongate his stride or widen his stride in ways in which he can stay away from, they ran a blitz the other day, an unblocked blitzer came in on him. One of the real quick kids, just I can think of who it was, whichever one it was, came through on a, where he was kind of a naked bootleg to that side, and he still, here he had a guy right in his face as he turned around, and he still was able to avoid him and get the pass off and fairly easily. He just has that kind of a – so there are two different kinds of runners, and they both have real pluses in terms of the way they're running, the way they run, and kind of interesting but they both are athletic as heck. I think they've probably, because of playing, you know, 2 years together, you don't have just one of them that you can focus on as the backup. And because Matt, is obviously, gets so much of the attention as he should as a fourth-year, quarterback, and for all that he's done for USC, we probably don't get to focus on, you know, the differences and the qualities and things that they bring to the game as much as we should. But they both bring wheels. They just have different, you know, one's kind of a dragster and the other one's kind of a, you know, all terrain vehicle or something like that, you know, but they've got seriously good, feet and legs, each one. They're just different.
Okay, let's go to Rob. This is interesting. He says he's a USC grad stuck living in Oregon, and the Duck fans are insufferable, so it's always a pleasure to beat them. But his question was, is there a specified time limit to practice time limit for players that have not started school yet? For instance, it seems to be an unfair advantage for Oregon players who are on the quarter system to have no classes until September 23rd. They can play three games or so before they even start school. Do they have unlimited meeting or practice or film room time? What gives? And again, that's from Rob.
No, I think the rules, you know, are the same. Same as for everybody. That's also the UCLA case. The downside of that is your student body's not on campus. And that can really be a negative. It's certainly a negative at UCLA, I think, in terms of the turnouts for the home games, in terms of just the atmosphere on campus. You could say it's an advantage, but basically now you're extending preseason camp from 4 weeks to 7 weeks. That's a long time to do nothing but football. I mean, you know, it gives you time to, you know, go into Portland 110 miles away and, you know, 45 minutes if you time it right on the I-5 or whatever, or I-10, what is it, I-5? I guess it is to Portland. But I don't know that that's a gigantic advantage, because they aren't going to let them have extra meeting time. They're not going to let them have extra practice time. And without the students on campus, I don't know. Although, you know, Oregon State used to turn that into an advantage. Those years were, you know, the student body would barely be on campus or not quite on campus, and here's USC rolling in and not being ready to play, and Oregon State was ready to play even though their students, you know, weren't there. So I think it all depends on, you know, on a lot of other things. But I know this. If I were UCLA, I wouldn't want to be on the quarter system if I as a football team. You know, like at UCLA, the band's not there. You know, they have the alumni band for two of their first games, you know, and that kind of thing. So it doesn't impact you quite as much on a campus like Oregon, where the, you know, stadium's right there. You know, kids are going to come to the game anyway. But there are some negatives about that, I think, almost more than the positives. I think it's better probably to get into the regular school, because basically most of the season you're going to be going to school, going to class, and integrating practice in with the rest of your day. And so the longer I think you put that off, I think that actually can be a negative. But that's, you know, you can make whatever you want out of any situation you're in. But I don't know that that's necessarily a positive unless, you know, you use it. Even then, you could say, well, what if they, you know, go ahead and do extra stuff and all that? I'm not sure extra stuff is necessarily a good thing. If you're doing it right, you really don't want to overdo it in those Say they've got 7 weeks for their first game. I'm not sure you want to overload them with football and what's going to be really a long season. So I don't think it necessarily has to. It's an interesting point, but I'm not sure it necessarily gives them an advantage.
Okay. Kevin wanted to know, let's see, he said, thoughts on what impact Nike may have in Oregon's sanction levels. They sponsor seemingly every mid- and major program in college sports. Could that benefit them, or will Phil Knight have no effect? That's from Kevin.
Really good question. We can only guess, and you're not necessarily asking a person who is that confident in the NCAA's ability to handle outside influences when it comes to, you know, rendering just verdicts on anybody. I mean, I was a little put off by the fact that, you know, there you were, and the NCAA championship game, and you look, the TV cameras, you know, zero in on Anthony Davis's family in the Kentucky section, and there also are, you know, Phil Knight and Nike's director of international basketball, who both happened to end up in the locker rooms with their Kentucky hats on and all that kind of thing. God knows if that would have been a USC game in football, and you'd have had two sponsors like that on the sidelines or in the locker room or whatever. Holy crummy, they'd have, you know, that would have been a death penalty sentence. So will it, you know, impact Kentucky? Of course not. That's where the NCAA makes all their money, in college basketball, in that tournament. So, you know, was it jarring, you know, when we hear an NCAA, you know, getting up on their soapbox and preaching against, you know, all the evils of Reggie Bush turning his back on amateurism, and then, you know, I mean, come on. So, you know, it's hypocritical to the nth degree. It can't hurt. Let's just say this. Nike's situation in terms of the Oregon situation will not hurt Oregon. at all. Nike could, you know, if Nike ever one day decided we're going to withdraw every coach's contract and every school's contract, man, the wailing and the nasty, you know, I mean, most of these coaches, they make more money, you know, not from their, you know, contract with the school than, you know, from their contract with the school. And some of these guys would be getting cut down from $4 and $3 million, you know, down to a measly, you know, $1 million a year or something like that. And that would be awful. Can't live on, if you're a, you know, a higher education person, how can you live on less than $3 or $4 million a year? So Nike has really helped to change the whole culture of college athletics, whether necessarily for the good, we'll let other people judge that for right now, but it won't hurt Nike, or it won't hurt Oregon to have Nike in their corner.
I agree with you 100% there. We are curious to see what happens. I'm not sure when the NCAA will decide anything, but we obviously will be waiting. We'll talk about it on the podcast when that comes down.
And there, Ryan is being very generous to the NCAA. Those of us who think the NCAA decides things, then they figure out how to justify the decision when they announce it. But that the decision is made, and then they go out and collect as much evidence as they think they need to justify the decision that was made like years before when they decide they have somebody they, A, want to take care of, or B, want to try to destroy. Wish it weren't that way. Wish we didn't think that. But having gone through the USC case, one can't think otherwise.
Yeah, that's a very good point. That was a predetermined decision, and then you try to justify it afterwards. So, like Dan's saying, probably the decision about Oregon's already in there, and they, now they have to come up with the evidence to support whatever the decision
was. Yeah, I think Phil's made the decision for the NCAA. Just a guess.
Yeah, if I had to guess, I'd guess that way too.
Notice, for example, they're now recruiting running backs from Texas again. They went on a Texas moratorium, recruiting moratorium for a while. The fact that they started re-recruiting Texas from running backs tells me they don't have a really bad feeling about their situation. We'll see. I mean, they could always surprise us. You know, the surprises have all gone in one direction.
Yes.
Thus far.
That is very, we'll that's very true. How many positive surprises if you're looking from a USC point of view? One last topic, Dan. This is from Brian. He says, I was wondering how many seniors and juniors are currently on the roster and what will happen if less than 18 players leave after this season or less than 15 after next season, since we're currently at the 75-player maximum and we are hoping to sign 18 players this year and 15 next year, how would USC make the numbers work? Would scholarships ever be pulled from players who have little chance of contributing? That's from Brian.
You know, I don't think that's the game plan, but I think USC's in a situation. They've been put there by the NCAA, who absolutely could care less about players and athletes and all of that and their role as a caretaker and an organization that's going to stand up for kids. But they put USC in a position where USC must recruit absolutely at a minimum level the maximum number of recruits that they're allowed. USC must, they got 12 last year, which allows them to have 18 with the three early entries for this coming season. And then 15 the next season. They must recruit the minimum and see what happens. There are ways in which, like this year, everything might work out. There's a real chance that it's all going to balance out, and that would be the case. You know, I think putting numbers together now and saying, well, there are this many juniors and seniors, and if they recruit this many, what have? There are so many, you know, in terms of just all the things, you know, in terms of, you know, injuries and health issues and academic issues and, leaving early for the NFL. All of those are just completely unpredictable in so many ways. And so the numbers aren't that far off in terms of the ones leaving and projected to leave and the ones you're recruiting and all that. But I think the one standard you have to think about is USC must recruit to the minimum number. I mean, it was a terrible, terrible idea for the NCAA to limit the amount of players USC could recruit in a year. They only did that because USC honestly, fairly, and without breaking the rules, recruited the right number of kids and didn't run kids off and didn't play all those games that the SEC played when they recruited 35 a year every year, and they'd end up with, over a five-year period, 185 kids recruited, you know, where there, and there are 175 and they're allowed 85 on scholarship. Everyone knew what was happening down there. Well, since USC didn't do that, the NCAA added the extra layer of not just the unprecedented 75 a year is all you're allowed to have on scholarship. They added the extra two little where they gave them free agency so players could leave who couldn't be replaced. I mean, the NCAA basically said they're hoping players get injured or fail out or leave early and that USC can't recruit and replace them. That's evil. I mean, that's just evil. It's the one area where USC, you wished they would have decided or figured out a way to challenge the NCAA, because there's no way USC should ever have to go through a season with fewer than 75. But let's say there's a year where they think, oh, we might have three more because of kids that didn't leave or because of the way the numbers work out, and we'll only recruit 12 this year. And then something happens, and five kids you're not thinking about, you know, all of a sudden they're gone, and now you're going with fewer than 75 scholarships. That would almost be, you know, malpractice if the coaches don't recruit at least the number that they're allowed to recruit, which is, you know, criminal. I mean, that they went below 20 a year for USC, or they could have easily said this: USC, your penalty is going to be play 3 years with 75 or fewer scholarships. That's it. And USC would have had the ability to adjust depending on what happens in those years. But they didn't want USC to have that kind of ability. They didn't want to be fair, and they wanted to try, I think, to make USC go with fewer than 75 scholarships. So USC cannot not recruit at least the 15 a year for the 3 years. There's nothing, you know, they just cannot do that. So, and if it turns out that they've got 76 or 77, you know, and someone has to be, you know, asked, maybe that, you know, your scholarship won't be there. The scholarships are a year-to-year process, and it's not something USC asked for, and it's not something USC's ever really done. The USC's conscience, I think, is really clear in that area, and yet I think the program, it requires them to recruit the 15 a year, no matter what the numbers say, and see how it works out. That's my take, but I think that's their take too. They have to bring in 15 a year average for these 3 years.
For sure, and then if you just look at the team right now, it's exactly at 75. After Jesse Scroggins left, it's at 75. If someone fails out, now you're below. I mean, there's nothing you can do at this point. So you do kind of need a little bit of wiggle room there. And you would like it to be where there's a former walk-on on scholarship or something that's lower-hanging fruit. He wasn't on scholarship before. Maybe you could – I mean, you don't want to take anyone's scholarship away, but if you have to, then maybe that's where it goes. I mean, there, you know, there's still some options. Lane Kiffin needs to have the plan. His plan has options, and like Dan said, you want to try to make it land at 75, not 72, not 70. I mean, the lower it goes, it could snowball and get lower and lower, so – it's probably going to be a little bit above that after every class. And then if you lose a guy or two, then you're okay. And like I said, maybe a little wiggle room, something in there where you can kind of keep it and do whatever you can to keep that number at 75.
Right. But you can't ever go into a year and say, wow, we're at 63 now. We can only recruit 12 or 13, you know, and sign 12 or 13. Can't do that. Got to sign 15. Absolutely, positively have to sign 15. It's just like you offer a whole lot more than you're ever going to sign. That's just how you do it. You can't just offer 15, for example. You wouldn't get 15. So it's an inexact science, maybe closer to an art. And thus far, they seem to be, you know, seem to be doing it pretty well. But, for example, look at last year. You know, there a lot of people had a lot of suspicions about the last two kids who ended up at Stanford and not at USC at the end of the day. Had USC not had the ability this year to go out and get 18 or to replace those or whatever, they're stuck, you know. I mean, those are unforeseen circumstances where somebody tells you he's absolutely coming, tells all the players he's coming, and then waits to the end of the day and goes to, you know, one of your rivals. Can't let yourself be in those positions where somebody else has control pretty much of your roster on those last few spots. You have to have options, and one of the ways you give yourself enough options is you sign enough players. You sign at least as many as they let you. So you cannot end up with a situation where you're trying to outguess at the end of the year how many guys you're going to have left and let that control how many you recruit.
I agree 100%, Dan. Well, thanks again for coming on the show. Thanks for everyone that's sending in those questions this week. Again, we cut it a little short, but there's a big announcement coming up at 11 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, Pacific Daylight Time, I guess you'd say. Jalen Ramsey, the four-star quarterback. So, Dan, thanks again for coming on the show, and I guess we'll talk to you again next week.
Sounds great. Looking forward to it. See you, Ryan.
All right, everyone else, thank you very much for tuning into the Peristyle Podcast. Stay tuned for that live announcement on Rivals.com, USCFootball.com at the top of the hour. Jalen Ramsey will have plenty more video and analysis of Jalen Ramsey after that announcement, and we'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast presented by USCFootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your iPod or MP3 player for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.